Position number 22081, rule 6.
So, after this period of stalemate in the front line, could you just describe your memories of how the Battle of Sedge Unay started and what you remember about the, you know, the earliest part of it?
Well, when the battle started, like, I was at Battalion HQ at the time. We was well up, you know, really. But then, to me, we seemed to get overrun. And then we heard the Jerrys was in the woods, like, you know, and they were shouting, "Give yourself up, Johnny," and all this. You answer around after your wife and sweetheart sort of thing, you know. And it was just chaos, and you didn't know. And I think it was the Foresters, the Lessers. One of them, we was going to relieve one of them, actually. And they all come back, sort of thing, you know. And I remember, I hadn't got a rifle then, and there was a little culvert over a bit of a river, and me and Tommy Brown and I think it was one of the runners, we got our head under there, you know, to keep up, because there was a lot of stuff flying about, you know. And it was real confusion. Anyway, nobody seemed to know what was happening. And we weren't far off the old road, it was old track really. And I left my bike, three or four yards away, I suppose against a tree or something. Well, after this, there was chaos for 2 or 3 hours, like, you know, didn't know what was happening. And I got out the doings to go and get my bike. My bike went there. I don't know why that's bloody clear. Anyway. I said there were 3 hours, and we crawled out there. We hadn't got a clue where everything was and where anybody was going. So we decided to go. You can hear the 25 pounders, like, you know, we were not far from them. And we walked back there, and we walked back to, that took us, I think, 5 or 6 hours to get back and get contact with the battalion, actually. And somebody else, one of the company boys, as they were coming through, he jumped on the bike and gone back with us, hadn't he? You know, and that was a funny idea. It was just, nobody did know what happened. And it was a couple of days afterwards before we realised we'd lost half of the bloody battalion there, you know. We had, really. And I think it was only because the lads didn't know what was happening, you know. You didn't know whether you were shooting at your own people or not, really, you know what I mean? But you knew the Jerrys were there because they were shouting all over the place. And to me, that was terrible. But I learned sort of a lesson, because we sorted ourselves out after that, all of us. That was real confusion.
Now, according to the battalion history, you were pulled back from your initial positions.
That was the idea, one. But there was we were going to relieve the Foresters and the Lessers, and they were coming back before we moved in, sort of thing, you know.
Now, I should have asked you this before, but was the terrain in this area, it was possible to use your bike to a certain point?
We can get on the road, like, you know, because you left the bike, you know, well, it was near enough road, leaning against the tree, because there was a wood effect around where we was, you know, and we can hear the Jerrys running about the wood, and there was firing everywhere, like, you know. And it was, nobody didn't know, not just us, so, you know, nobody did seem to know what was happening.
Can you remember much about, you know, what was actually happening at battalion headquarters? You were with, you were attached to the, you know.
Well, they seemed to all disappear as well, like, you know. What I mean, it was just utter confusion. That's my version of it, really. And communication, put it that way.
Obviously, the Sigma Platoon would have had men with the rifle companies.
With the company, but you see, the companies weren't very far away. We was all in a, you know, same area sort of thing, you know. And because, I say, the 25 pounders weren't far behind where we was, and we've stopped at one of their batteries and we're talking to them, see what happened, and they told us that a lot of the troops had gone back, like, getting overrun, and they were all firing all the time, like another battery. So,
And in terms of the town of Sedjenain itself, what do you remember about that?
I can't remember much about it at all, to be quite honest with you.
So you didn't move?
There weren't much of a town, actually, was it?
Or a village or...?
Yeah, a couple of shacks, sort of thing. I went to, you know. Yeah, that was... I think the Gooms were there as well, you know. Now, they knew what they were doing. Mind you, I suppose they'd been there all over the place, weren't they? And the commandos, they'd got seem to have it sorted out. But we didn't seem to know what was going on, but it wasn't just a battalion. There was something else happening with other battalions, you know.
What were your orders? What orders were you being given over this period?
We didn't get any orders. See, that was the trouble. Nobody seemed to get any orders, and, you know what I mean. And I say it was just, if there'd been somebody there, well, we should have been told what was expected and what that we would get. Right. But some of the companies, they knew what they were doing. Some of the companies did, you know, because, you know.
But, weren't actually being sent to a specific company and told to take a message here or a message there?
No. Mm-hmm.
What about Lieutenant Girling and, you know, Sergeant Baker? Were they, you know, signal sergeant, were they still with you?
I don't know what happened to Tommy Baker. He wasn't there, and I don't think Girling was there, actually. I reckon he'd been made up to adjutant. And it was either Perryman or a Captain Logan. It was in that area at the time, like, you know. But everybody seemed to get split up, you know.
So there was all of this confusion. What did you think was happening? You know, I mean, you piece it together.
Well, we thought we just got to get overrun and we all took prisoner, sort of thing, you know. That's what was in our mind, really. Yeah.
Was there any kind of briefing of the men before the actual battle? Because apparently, you know, the rifle companies launched several attacks against the Germans.
But I think it was a surprise to us, many of us, to what was happening, more than anything else. And
was that the speed of the events?
Yeah. And then I say, when the next day, like, sort of thing, you realise, and I mean, half the Flaming Battalion was missing, you know.
What was your reaction to that, finding that out?
Well, it was terrible, actually. You didn't know really if they were missing, or they'd been killed, or they'd been taken prisoner, or what happened, you know. It just, you looked around, and there was, you know, there was only more or less the B echelon people there, like, you know. No, it was a bit odd. But we learned a big lesson there, because we...
Was this the period when you were under enemy air attack as well?
Oh, yeah, it was all happening, like, you know, the... But we'd always got good support from the 25-pounders. They were always just behind us all the time, like the battery then. So, yeah.
So did you see any of the rifle company men coming through when you were...
Yeah, of course. It was dark as well, like, you know, confused, like, you know. I'm not quite sure it was the Leicesters or the Forresters that come through us.
How long do you think the battle lasted?
A day and a half, I suppose, something like that. They got it sorted out eventually, you know, because when we got back near enough to BS, they got sorted out, and there was still some companies up the front, you know, and they were employed with some of the other brigades, you know, to getting it sorted out, right. But our battalion had lost a few blokes up there. But say, so you didn't know whether they were missing or whether they were killed or what, because there was a lot of these mines about as well, like, you know. Yeah, it was a funny old job.
And so did you move back from Sedjenain after this battle?
We come back to for about a month after where BS was, you know. And then we were all more or less come back to that area and they got sorted out and regrouped, and they made some companies up and took some from another company. So instead of having perhaps three companies, I finished up perhaps two, like, you know, until we got reinforcements in again.
So in the immediate aftermath of the battle, about how many men do you think were left in the battalion?
Well, in actually, away from BS Long, I bet there weren't above a couple of hundred. Because there was quite a lot of people at B Echelon, right, you know. But with the infantry boys, I bet there weren't many out of there, because we started what, near 1,000 men, didn't we? 900 men, something like that. And I bet there weren't about 200 come out there. We had an awful lot of newcomers come in before we went in again, put it that way, you know.
So what happened in the immediate aftermath of the battle? Who do you remember standing out during this period? Getting you back into shape.
Well, see, that we had to wait. We had some reinforcements come in, or we had some of the lessers or something like that to make us up until the new reinforcements come in, sort of thing, you know. I suppose that took about another week or something like that. But then the next time we went up, we were got sorted out. We knew what we were doing. Everybody knew what was.
So you'd been reinforced again.
That's right, that. Yeah.
So what had gone wrong at Sedgenay, do you think?
Communication.
Communication.
Definitely.
And was that to do with the equipment that you had, the number 18 set? Do you think that could have played a part, or what was the?
Well, I don't know, mate.
Because obviously the dispatch rider was.
I think there was a lot of it being the first time, fear in a lot of the lads, because I'm not. Everybody was frightened of something, you know, no matter what is, or no, you know, you done as you're told to stay, but if you knew what you were told to do. But that was the first time, see, we'd seen battle and been involved in it quick and, you know, not really understanding it, I suppose. But if everybody had an idea of what was happening, it had been done a lot better. But I don't know, it was just one of them things.
So you're training in England and really prepared you?
Not to that extent for that, but you didn't expect that sort of thing, you know, really.
What in retrospect?
Well, I've got the three companies, like, you know, and the Italian HQ. And I'm sure we was on the move by going forward. And when, I think it must have been 137 or 138 Brigade, they were getting pushed back out, you know. And that's what caused a lot of the confusion as well, because obviously even the officers didn't know what they were doing, you know. I don't know, it's just my opinion, like, you know. I thought about it, well, you're sitting about every many times, you know, what happened and what went wrong. And I don't think it should have happened like that, but then. Yeah.
Were you aware of the colonel of the regiment at all, and the, you know, the battalion, the officers in battalion HQ? Have we got any memories of them from this period?
That was Preston, wasn't it? And he was a good bloke. He was a good. I think it was Colonel Preston. Yeah, it must have been. I'm not quite sure, mind you. Or was it Montefiore, what do you call him? I'm not quite sure. But it was all changed the next time we went in. There was a lot of the officers was changed over into different jobs and sort of thing, you know, and there was someone made up. And it was a different kettle of fish then. So they must have learned a lot, you know.
Now, in terms of the signal platoon, after the battle, how had the battle affected the signal platoon? Were you?
Well, same. I don't. We lost. I think we lost about four, perhaps five. Yeah. But we got sorted ourselves out. But yeah, we must have lost about four or five. I should think. But then we didn't know whether they were missing or what happened to them. Really. That was a funny old job.
So you were moved further back.
Yeah, we come back towards where BN Echelon was, and I was thinking we must have been there perhaps a week. Well, we got some reinforcements, but I think that instead of having three companies, I reckon two companies were formed instead of three, because they didn't have enough men for the three, you know.
Where did the reinforcements come from?
No, I don't know. They must have come up from old years, I suppose, weren't they?
And were they DLI men, or where were these?
There were all sorts of stuff. They come from different, you know, places, really. Yeah. Yeah, I think some of them would come up from the desert, actually, you know. They've been going to the desert, like down with the desert rats sort of thing. I think they'd been moved up to enforce us, like that.
Now.
But we had. I think we had Indians up, you know, the Indians just affects the grow up to us. This is up to remember, actually, you know.
Now, you, I mean, this was obviously your first battle, your first encounter with the Germans. You suffered heavy casualties. What was, I mean, obviously morale would have been pretty low.
It was, yeah.
But had, what was your opinion of the German troops that you'd fought against, and what was your thoughts about, you know, this attack by them, which you, from their point of view...
Well, there seemed to be more of them, what there was of us, really, when they were in that woods. You know, there was all mixed, but there was a lot of them. They were all shouting and what have you, you know. They'd been in battle before.
Did anybody shout back at them?
Oh, yeah.
What did you shout back?
I don't know.
So they were close enough for you to...
Oh, yeah.
Was there any aspect of their... you know, tactics or equipment that you thought you could learn from?
Well, I think we all had been equipped, like, I know we was in BHQ, but if you'd had a Tommy gun or a Bren gun, you know, half a dozen of you, I mean, you wouldn't, you know, right, wouldn't you? Well, you'd have helped a lot, put it that way.
So more automatic weapons?
Yeah, because the rifle, not good, yeah, I mean, you got to reload every time with single shot, sort of, yeah, I mean, that took time, where, you know, they'd got them smiters and, you know. I say, we must have learnt a lot from that, the officers and them sort of thing, you know.
So you were pulled back, you were reinforced.
And we went back again.
And what was your next, what was the next incident that you can remember?
Was that, that must have been Green Hill, wasn't it? We went out long, say, and before we moved up from Sedge 9. And then, I say, we had a lot of help from the Gooms and that, and we kept going forward, and everything went, well, going to plan, sort of thing, because until we got to choose. Like.
Because apparently, according to the battalion history, you had another major battle around about the 22nd of April, attacking another set of hills.
That was getting towards Tunis, was it?
Yeah. Can you remember much about that specific?
We did a lot of running about with it, Tunis. I remember there was another carrier motorbike with us one day, and we was doing some. We was running, it was towards Tunis, and Harry Sims, I'll never forget in all my life. And I think we'd be going to brigade headquarters or something. Anyway, Harry came off his bike. I don't know what fetched him off. Anyway, I'd gone past him, I come back, and I says, what's up in Harry? Come off, he was swearing at some wog or something. And he sat on the pavement like this. I said, you all right, mate? Yeah, I'll be all right in a minute. But like you said, jock, he said, that's it. I said, well, he scratched himself a fair bit. I said, you'll have to go and get that seen too. And there was a local medic, army people not far away, like, and I left him there. I went back to the battalion. And when I got back there, I said, where's Harry gone? I said, oh, he's come off his bike. I says, he'll be all right. I says, he's only got a few scratches. He died 2 days later. I felt such a fool. He'd split his spleen. You know, Harry Sims. He's a little lad. Yeah, that got on my mind for a long while. Because I went back and said to the lads, I said, oh, you'll be back in a little while. I just got to get this. Because you had to have an injection if you scratched the ground, like, you know. And back I made up, like, you know. Went back, I think the day after, I went called it, oh, and he died. But I told all the platoon, I said, oh, you'll be all right, back. But he sat there talking to me, like, I'm talking to you. But he'd split his spleen and that killed him. Harry Sims. North Country lad, he was.
Right, Mr. Gray, since we last talked, you've had a chance to look at the Army Film Unit footage, which was taken in Tunisia, and that's reference AYY329 and AYY357, and that's of the 16th Battalion. During the Sedge 9 battle. Were you aware of the Army Film Unit?
Not really, no.
Did you ever encounter these men?
No, not really, no. I was surprised when you told me the other week, you know, but okay.
Now, having looked at the film, did it bring back any of the memories?
You can visualise all the, you know, the countryside and all, you know, that's, you know, fun. Brought back a lot of memories, sort of ring, really, you know. I was a bit of the one silent with it.
No familiar faces?
Yeah, quite a few familiar faces, but yeah, it's a job putting names to them, it's a trouble. So. Yeah.
Now, we've also looked at some of your photographs, you know, taken through the war, and some of these will be put in your file at the War Museum. And I was struck by, in some of the photographs, you weren't crash helmets. In others, you weren't. What? But would you always wear the tin hat?
If we was going through a bit of rubbish sort of thing, I always had a tin hat on. Yeah.
Did that affect your ability to drive?
Oh, no, no, no. The worst thing about driving was like more or less the dust and that sort of thing, you know. And if anything was dropping handy, you know, just you go through clouds of smoke sort of thing and that business. So.
How do the bikes stand up to the terrain in North Africa?
Pretty well. I say, you know, they got knocked about, but they stood up pretty well. But the best one we had was when we had the matchless. That was a higher sort of thing off the ground, and of course it was all more off the roads, really, you know. The only thing I found, that when they got tubular forks on the front of the matchless to start with, and we used to perhaps buckle the back wheel a bit. You know, that's a bit odd. But now, the engine wise used to stand up pretty well.
Now, when did you have the matchless?
I think we had them before, when we come to Salerno. And we must have changed them over in Bizerta before we got on board to come to Salerno.
So what did you have before that?
Aerials and Norton's.
And how would they be? How many of each would you have in the?
Well, so there's four of dispatch riders and the signals, you know. But then the carriers would be like four bike riders and the carrier platoon, you know.
And would you be assigned a bike and stick to that bike all the way through?
Oh yeah, we had the same bike. As soon as we drew the bike, that was ours to finish.
So between the Norton and the Ariel, which did you prefer out of those two?
Well, the Ariel was a little bit better than the Norton. It was a little bit lighter, you know. The Norton was a bit heavy, so it, you know. But to me, the Matchless was the best one of the lot. Really.
Now, were you ever under direct air attack during your time in North Africa?
Yeah.
Could you describe some of those incidents?
Well, I was at Sedgenine. We had them Stukas used to come down and just screaming their heads off, you know. And they used to, the noise used to frighten you more than anything else, really, they were stupid. And we never got to say, we didn't have a lot of air cover at Sedgy at all, you know. God, well, the desert aircraft were too far away, weren't they? Sort of thing.
Now, what was the drill if you were, you know, you're a dispatch rider, you're between, you're going somewhere on the bike and you're under air attack. What was the drill? What did he tell you to do?
Well, we more or less looked after yourself, really, but when we was on the bike, there was lots of things that we didn't hear, you know, really. And there was a lot of things going on, like shells dropping and coming overhead. You wouldn't hear that, really. So, you know, it's a lot we...
So if you were in a...
But if we had the Stukas coming down, we'd get off, and if we'd got something to dig a hole quick and get our head in the dust, like that was it. You know?
But you wouldn't have a lookout, you know, another man on the bike and looking back and so on.
Of course, I mean, we was travelling from battalion and shooting companies or to brigade and that sort of thing, you know.
Were you able to go off the road?
I was nearly off the road all the while, really, you know. That's why the height of the matches was the best, because you can, you know, no problem sort of thing.
Did you ever come under artillery fire in North Africa?
Oh, yeah, bike? Lots of it, really. But you had it all the time, didn't you, really? But
what I mean is, when you were, you know, you're delivering a message, you're on the bike, you know, with the road, well, the actual bike itself.
So you wouldn't hear them so much, but you'd see where they were dropping, with the, you know, the mortars were more, they seemed to use a lot more of them multi things, you know, naval warfare sort of thing. They used a lot of them, and sometimes you would hear them, it depends, you know, how fast or that you was going, because obviously you was frightened as well as anything else, because you didn't know where you was going half the time, did you? And obviously you can see the smoke coming up from the shells, not a drop, like, but you just carried on.
Now, other veterans have talked about, you know, the way in which a rumour would spread in a battalion and would be through the dispatch riders. Do you have any opinion on that?
No, they used to always, the chaps used to always ask us, you know, if we were going home and all this sort of business, you know, where we were going, coming out for a rest or something, you know. Because they used to bring us out about every 48 hours if it was a battle, like, you know, and you'd come back, and we used to come back as far as the 25 pounders, like, you know. And that's where you used to have a bit of a break and sort of thing, you know, really.
And do you think, would you find out about these rest breaks before the
Oh, we had a good idea. I think we've been at the battalion at Shield, and you know. And so every time we went to the company, we were asking what's going on, what's happening in the northern prison.
So you had a lot of contact with Battalion HQ.
Was it Battalion HQ?
And any of the company HQs as well. Are there any personalities that stand out? You know, people that you were dealing with on a daily basis.
Well, RSM Thomason, he was up HQ all the time, really, you know, because he used to look after all the ammunition, where, you know, as a food advisor, you know, and there was a company quartermaster sergeant about a year, done a bit with the food and getting the, you know, the box of grub up to things, you know, compo boxes. One year he used to have a compo box of about between 7 years, sort of thing, you know.
You've mentioned David Girling as a signals officer. Can you remember who the man was that replaced him when you were in North Africa?
Well, I think it must have been when we was in Girling went to be adjutant. I think that was down in Rye, and then we had Captain Harris. He was with us when we first went abroad. But when, after Sedgenane, whether he got injured or not in Sedgenane, I don't know, but we had, who else was there, man? We had another one there for a while. Beats me.
What kind of man was Harris?
Nice fella, I get on with. Ever since, good chap. But he must have, whether he got injured or not in Sedgenane or not, because he come back again when we was in Italy a bit. But we had somebody else in North Africa. So I think Harris must have got injured or something there, because Harris went across one of the rivers in Italy with some of the lads, because they tipped a boat up, didn't they? But the one in between, I can't just remember who that was now.
So you had somebody else?
Oh, we've got four. One of them signals, isn't there? What did I say it was? Yeah, that was.
So you've had a think and.
Perriman, yeah, he was the one. Because I say when we was in Sedgenane, he jumped on the back of the boat with me, and because he used to go on a bit of a recce sort of thing, you know. And I said we hit a wild dog and we come off, and he was all right, but I finished up in one of the tunnels. They got the medics in there, you know, and I must have been knocked out. But I was in there about a day, sort of thing. But yeah, but Perriman was already. But I'm sure that was Perriman. It was on the back of the boy.
Mm-hmm. And that's it being one of the later photographs.
Yeah.
Yeah. That we've looked at. Now, you'd been in action in North Africa. What did you learn about how to handle a bike in like an operational circumstances compared to, you know, training exercises in England?
Yeah, that was no problem really, because I mean you was part of the machine actually, you know, and so we were pretty reasonable on it really, you know, on the bikes, because you can more or less do anything with them really.
So there's nothing new.
No.
Now we've talked a little bit about what you were armed with. You were armed with a revolver.
Yeah.
What do you think about that?
Well, it was easy to get about with, but it was no good to us if he was in a bit of a trouble, you know. But then when we left Bizerta to go to Salerno, I think they give us atomic guns then, you know, and that would be put them across our shoulder, right?
And they'd be on your back when you're on the bike?
Yeah, yeah. That was a different kettle of fish altogether.